Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, how you doing?
I'm very well, Mark. Thank you. Today, we have a wonderful guest who's joining us.
That's right, we do. Today, we have Erica Bannick. Erica is the director of Extel New York Regional Center, where she is responsible for the overall organization of the Regional Center, including managing staff members and daily operations. Erica serves as a main point of contact for investors, agents, broker-dealers, attorneys, third-party consultants, and of course, podcast interviews. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It is so nice to be a part of this.
Well, Mark, I thought Erica would be a wonderful person to have on one of our shows, just because we get so many questions about not only day-to-day operations on regional centers, but also because she's the director of such a prominent regional center here in New York City. Erica, do tell us a little bit about Extel.
Extel New York Regional Center is an affiliate of Extel Development Company, which is one of the most active real estate developers in Manhattan. We are most recognized for our luxury residential portfolio, but we have many projects that are in commercial, mixed use, hospitality projects. Most of our portfolio is located in Manhattan, but we have projects that are outside of Manhattan as well. We've done projects in Boston, Miami, Chicago. Extel has been around for over 25 years. It is founded and ran by Gary Barnett.
So, Erica, then Extel is way more than just a regional center.
That's correct. So Extel Development decided that it would create its own regional center.
It was back in 2011, I believe.
Correct.
Because it was only one of the third or the fourth ones in New York City at that time.
That's right. So we were one of the first in New York, but it didn't stay that way for very long.
No, you weren't the first. NYCRC was the first.
I said one of.
Yeah. Actually, you were the fourth, because it was NYCRC, then it was New York Immigration Fund, then it was Manhattan Regional Center, then I believe you guys. Yeah.
We decided to do it in-house because we like to have control over the entire process. The Extel brand has been 25 plus years in the making, and it's important for us to have a lot of oversight on all various phases of the process. And because we are very much end user focused, you know, providing beautiful luxury residential homes to people, we wanted to really take advantage of our investor pool and be able to provide those same services to our investors.
Well, that's, you know, it's very interesting because on the show, we've had regional centers who are third party regional centers who have nothing to do with the actual project. But you are not a third-party regional center. You basically are a regional center for your own projects, correct?
That's correct.
Do you do other people's projects at all?
No, we do not. We have a huge portfolio at Extel, so we always have a very healthy pipeline.
Right. Well, there's a lot of interest in how large-scale projects are carried out, because smaller-scale projects, people tend to get an idea. But large-scale projects where you have so many people and you're talking such high figures, you know, it really confuses a lot of our listeners.
The larger the project, the certainly more complex it is.
Right.
Organization is key. When we started the regional center, there was quite a learning curve, but we have been able to really understand the process and how to organize each project and each person. So Extel New York Regional Center, we've raised over $500 million to date. And that means that we have over 1,000 investors that are currently in our projects and currently under our management.
So where do your investors come from mostly?
So our investors come mostly from China. We have a huge China base. We have investors from Vietnam, Turkey, Mexico, India, We really benefit from Extel Development's international recognition. So we were able to capture a lot of different markets.
Right. But what would you say are one of the major challenges of the large-scale projects that Extel does?
It's twofold in the sense that Extel, the developer side, what makes Extel a little bit different than most developers in Manhattan is we are a developer that focuses on large-scale assemblages, which means we don't just purchase one building, tear it down, and rebuild it. We look at locations, we look at what's in the neighborhood, what market trends are happening, and we will take, one project can take up to 10 to 15 different transactions in order to purchase different land parcels and air rights, in order to create a footprint and a building that we think would be most beneficial to the neighborhood that it's in. So that's from the developer standpoint.
Right. But for EB5 investors, what would you say are the advantages for an EB5 investor coming into a large project? And I'm going to ask you about the disadvantages.
Okay. So the advantage of coming into a large EB5 project is, one, you are not the only source of capital. So with some of the larger projects, our projects, the total project cost for some of our projects are between $700 million to $1.3 billion. So obviously we cannot fund the entire project with EB5. So you are positioned near or in the same capital stack with some of the extremely strong financial partners. We have very strong banking relationships, and we are able to utilize those and close very large construction loans. So you are a part of that capital stack. We also have extremely strong equity partners. So a lot of investors like to feel that sense of security. There's completion guarantees with a lot of the senior financing. So a lot of people feel much more comfortable knowing that there are other people looking at the project, doing their due diligence, and they are benefiting from that knowledge and expertise.
Erica, we hear a lot from investors also on small-scale projects, but there's been a lot of criticism of large projects in Manhattan. One criticism which has come from investors is that once they come into the investor pool, they're a nobody. They can't really get a hold of anyone if they have an issue, and they just become another number, and they're not an individual. So there is less respect for them within the project.
I can't speak to most regional centers, but I can speak to ours. We are very strong in our customer service. Investors are welcome to reach out to us at any point. We have people that speak various languages in order to maximize this transparency and communication. We send out quarterly reports on our projects and regular updates. We try to get back to investors as soon as possible, and we welcome their communication and their feedback.
Erica, you mentioned earlier that you're not a third-party regional center. In fact, you differentiated yourself from those third-party regional centers. So could you tell me a little bit about how those third-party regional centers work and maybe what's unique about Extel's approach?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Mark, because if you remember, we've had a lot of criticism from third-party regional centers about regional centers like Extel where they do their own projects.
I know there are a lot of third-party regional centers that have been extremely successful and are extremely well respected in the EB5 community. It was just a decision. Extel is a real estate developer, but it's something that we're a little bit different. We also have, it was quite natural to bring the regional center in-house. It's something that we've been comfortable doing on various types of departments. So Extel Development also has its own management service. We have our own marketing and sales group. So this is very much in line with the Extel brand, is to have this type of regional center in-house. We're able to really understand the investors and go through this investment process with them. And because Extel's brand is quite large, it's international sales brand, so there's a potential for these investors, and we've received multiple inquiries about, now I've invested in your project for EB5, but I'd also like to purchase one of your condominium units. So it makes sense to have a lot of communication with our investors and see if we can service them in other ways than EB5.
Erica, often people ask, with a large regional center like yours and a large name, why would you use EB5? Why would you need EB5?
So back in when we started the regional center, it was 2010 when we made our first submittal to USCIS. We received our designation in 2011. We were working on the construction of the International Gem Tower, and this was a very difficult time to get MES lending. So this was an opportunity, a creative solution to providing that source of financing in this project. And we basically just tested the market to see if it would work. And it has become a very important piece of capital financing for our projects. We've now done 4 different projects in Manhattan. We've done the International Gem Tower, which was a $75 million raise for a commercial luxury project in Midtown Manhattan. We raised $100 million for a 52-story rental building over on 41st Street and 10th Avenue. And we are currently in the midst of 2 new raises that we began in 2016.
Well, there's some history here, Mark, because just prior to Extel, the previous large glamour project within Manhattan was the Times Square Hotel, which actually our office was very much part of. And at that time, when we first went to China, for example, when we first went to investors, a lot of people said, oh, how can you possibly have a project which is at 500,000 in the heart of Manhattan? And at that time, it was the heart of Times Square. And that was one of the first times it was a project like that was out. And then the second big glamour project was the Gem Tower by Extel. So it was the start of what we were going to see as a change in the whole industry. Because, I mean, I personally believe that the advantage of such glamour projects is that it's brought a lot of confidence to EB5. But at the same time, there's been a lot of criticism. And given today's current climate on legislation and all the furor about the TEA, it is likely that Manhattan will no longer be a TEA after September, right?
That's correct.
That's the way it looks, correct. Right?
Yeah, you know, it looks different every week.
Well, that's true. How would that affect your business?
So EB5 has been a very vital tool for us, but Extel's ability to adapt has made them what they are today. And I think this will just be another way for us to be challenged and to find other financing to continue creating our portfolio in Manhattan. But we also have projects that are outside of Manhattan that would fall within the new TEA legislation and that we would be actively pursuing capital for some of those projects.
But what is the payback like for a project or rural anywhere in comparison to the payback in Manhattan? I mean, there really is no comparison.
It's different. It's very different. And it really depends on how the legislation plays out.
Yeah, because I can imagine that the investment hurdle would be lower for a rural area within a targeted employment area than, say, Manhattan. But understandably, the return on investment would be lower. So lower hurdle rate, but lower return on investment because it's a lower overall risk, right? But looking at projects in Manhattan, which may no longer be in a targeted employment area, have a higher investment amount and higher risk, but should also net the investor a higher rate of return, right?
No, I think the rate of return would be higher in Manhattan. The actual amount of money you would put down would be higher.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So the hurdle rate would be lower, the return would be lower, but at least it's an ability for some investors to utilize the EB5 program, even if they can't put into some of these, well, like glamour projects in Manhattan.
Right. Well, I do lecture when I'm out in countries, that, you know, they're just like you know, on an airline, you pay a little more for a business class seat as opposed to an economy seat. You would pay a little more for a business class project. You know, it's all about education, I think.
It's education and it's also the market hasn't been tested. We don't know what people will gravitate towards. So will people want, and I think that's why there have been so many successful large scale regional centers and developers is because the investors really want that security.
I totally agree, Erica, because as I said before, the confidence that large scale projects in these big cities have brought to the program is what it is today. I mean, we are looking at 58,000 petitions outstanding. billions of dollars are now coming in EB5. And it's really partly because of some of the larger names which are utilizing EB5. But how do you feel overall in the idea that, as some legislators are saying, that EB5 was not meant for large-scale projects? It was meant for smaller entrepreneurial projects.
Well, the program was created and it was adapted to allow for regional centers shortly after it was created. I think that we utilize it to the letter of the law, and that is what we can do. I think how it was originally, there was a lot of risk involved because individuals were not only immigrating, they were moving business, and that's including immigration, that's including international business. And I think there was a lot of difficulty with those two processes. And I think that having the regional center and taking that responsibility off the investors and allowing them to focus on their life planning, their immigration process, and let us handle the investment and make sure that you create the jobs, that the requisite jobs that you are supposed to create with that investment, I think it brings them a lot of comfort. So I think the regional center portion of this program has been quite successful. Maybe it wasn't what it had intended to be, but we use it how it's written.
Exactly. I don't think Congress really foresaw where it would go. But at the same time, because we deal not just with large regional centers and smaller regional centers, but we deal a lot with entrepreneurial cases and pooled projects, I can tell you that there's a lot of entrepreneurial cases, especially which other lawyers send us, which require troubleshooting, where they have trouble in creating 10 full-time jobs within the time frame or within the money. It's not easy. It really isn't. It sounds very easy that they would come and they'll open a Subway store and they'll create 10 jobs, but then practically it's not. So I do agree that if somebody is coming to a country for the first time, it is better to at least leave this task to someone else who knows what they're doing.
Right.
So Erica, thank you for sharing with us your feelings on the EB5 program with regard to the small entrepreneur projects. But I realize your background and your experience is with these, you know, large scale projects through your regional center. And I know, you know, part of your responsibilities is managing the staff members and the daily operations of the regional center. That's really something we haven't explored on this show before. Could you tell us, you know, tactically at a boots to the ground level, what does it take day to day to run a regional center?
Well, I'll give you the secret.
Uh-oh. Let's take notes.
It's having the most wonderful, talented, and creative team. And I say team because that's what we really are at Extel. It's truly a team from every single investor coming in throughout the entire process. We are very lucky to have the people that we work with just in the regional center. And we also have the ability to pull from the experience and the expertise of the Extel development group. So we are very, very lucky there.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Teamwork,
right?
Organization is key. I've been complimented from some of our immigration counsel as to my spreadsheets, to how organized everything is. But when you think about it, you're really following the full immigration process of an individual. And we have many individuals. And these individuals don't just come by themselves. They come with their families. And being able to watch them go through the entire phase is something that we need to be very aware of. And it's also a benefit to us. We like watching people go through the entire phase. We're now just starting to file our first 829s for our first project. And we're all very excited. We, you know, we celebrate with our investors when they start getting their green cards. And, it, you know, we are very proud of being able to be a part of people immigrating into the U.S.
Right. I can see that. But, you know, tactically, what does a day look like for you? And maybe that day running the regional center is evolving since now you're moving past the initial 526 applications and approvals and moving into the 829s. But, you know, what's a typical day like in your life at the Extel New York Regional Center?
It starts very early and sometimes it goes very late based on the international aspect of it. But, you know, you have the general organization, the general day-to-day administrative work. And we also really look towards all of our projects are organic. Everything moves. Everything changes. Everything evolves, and therefore we need to provide the information that's necessary to update our investors, update our offering documents. If we have a new piece of financing in one of the projects, this requires us to provide this information to our investors. We have investor feedback that we need to respond to. We work on many new projects at all times. We're constantly doing due diligence on potential EB-5 projects and looking for what could be next.
Okay. Let me ask this then, because you've given some feedback as far as the general business operations, but then you hinted at some like real tactical things there, such as the investor feedback. So, obviously without, disclosing some proprietary information or identifying information, what does that investor feedback look like? How does it come to you? Are there typical, concerns that investors have, and how do you go about responding to those? I really want to get a feel for, what the tactics of, running the regional centers like.
So I can speak to many things, but I also have to be careful as to what I can speak to regarding SEC regulations. So I can't get into the very details of our certain aspects of our projects and what those questions may be from the investors.
Okay, yeah, I can appreciate that.
But it does sound, I know your organization, your team is great, Erica, but it does sound that it's, from your experience, that it's not that easy to run a regional center.
No, it is not easy to run a regional center.
There's a lot of listeners who are who often are thinking of running their own regional center, and they think, should we have our own regional center? Should we rent? What would your advice be for somebody who has a good project, but they're just not sure whether they should put their own regional center up or not?
I think currently the climate is highly competitive. I think it's in a mature phase. And I think that if you have a project that you feel very strongly about and you do not have a huge pipeline of multiple projects that are coming down the pike, I think it's important to partner with somebody that has a real finger on the pulse as to what the international markets are looking for, what investors are looking for, and that would be to work with a third-party regional center. But if you have something that you want to pursue and you have many projects that are coming, it may make sense to create your own regional center. But there are increased costs for running a regional center. There are new reforms that are coming through that we hope will come through come September 30th. For added security to our investors, but these are going to come with increased fees to the regional center. So you need to be aware of that as well. And to create a regional center, it's extremely expensive right now. So I think that having the expertise and the experience from a third party that knows what's happening in the market and that can guide you is very, very important.
So, Erica, we're independent attorneys, and I know you have in-house attorneys, and we've often argued against having in-house attorneys, mainly because we feel that an investor, each investor has unique circumstances, and many a time, maybe EB-5 is just not appropriate. How would your in-house attorney really decide that or give that kind of advice to an investor?
Our in-house attorney is excellent, but she very much is focused on what is best for the investor. So when there is necessary advice or she feels that EB-5 may not be the appropriate choice, we are happy to outsource and reach out to some of the wonderful immigration counsel here in New York and get that investor the right information for their specific situation.
So you do turn investors away?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I've heard a lot about in-house attorneys and projects where everything's in-house where you won't turn anybody away.
No, our goal is for the investors to be satisfied with their decision.
Well, Erica, I and I'm sure future potential investors certainly appreciate that position, that you'll be open and honest. And if it's not a good match, you turn them away. Erica Bannock, thank you so much for coming on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's shahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.